providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am sticking to the theme of discussing this negative interest rate policy, or NERP. This time I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I check out every day. Now, Mark, let's do a little comparison here of NERP around the world and even some of these countries that might not be in a negative interest rate, but it's been talked about a lot and they're being forced to address it, much like the Fed. Take us through what you're seeing in a comparative fashion around the world.
Sure. So I think that you really have like three camps right now. One camp already have negative interest rates, like the European Central Bank, the Swiss National Bank, and the Bank of Japan. All three of those have been easing policy during this crisis, but none of them have gone deeper into negative interest rates. So what they've done is they've expanded their asset purchases and other things like that to provide liquidity, but have not gone deeper into negative rates. Then there is a camp, another camp of countries that do not have negative interest rates, like Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Then you have another set of countries, the US and the UK primarily, where there are some measures, some market instruments that have gone negative. For example, in the US, we've got the Fed funds futures contracts from April of next year, negative, implying negative yields. And underlying that, of course, you know, that's a futures contract. You can look at the underlying, which is the OIS, the overnight index swaps. And that is also showing a forward, if you have a forward curve of that, it's negative in about 2 years' time. In the UK, their two-year gilt, that's their two-year bond, has went negative. It's been negative Wednesday, Thursday, and today being Friday, 3 days in a row. And what's ironic about the US and the UK is that almost every Fed official that's spoken, including Chairman Powell, were very explicit that even though they know some countries have negative interest rates, it's not appropriate for the U.S. And the Bank of England governor, new governor, said the same thing, that yes, they're aware that other countries have tried negative interest rates, but it's nothing that's compelling them to do that. And you know, you're going to have a new governor of the Bank of Canada, and among his first, his new governor takes over next month, but some of his initial comments was essentially the same thing that the Bank of England and the Fed said, which is essentially, so far, this experiment with negative interest rates is not compelling enough for us to adopt them. Now, there is one country that has said that they would be open to negative interest rates, and that's New Zealand. But what's interesting is that when the Reserve Bank of New Zealand met, they did not cut interest rates. Their cash rate, their target rate is still 25 basis points. But what they did do is increased, doubling the size of their bond purchase program, which drove down their two-year yield to 6 basis points, essentially halved it. So the issue partly is the signaling that the RBNZ gave. And was it like serious? Are they going to do it? Or was it just flirting with it to keep interest rates low? The other country to consider in all this, maybe Norway, kind of interesting, because recently Norway surprised the market and cut their target rate to zero. And so right there on the zero cusp, it's like you could appreciate why it's possible to dip a little bit in some market rates.
So, Mark, even though we are hearing from Powell, other Fed officials, even the new governor of the Bank of Canada saying they don't want to go into a negative interest rate, do you think that the market could actually force them into it?
It's a good question. I'm very like reluctant. I've had this hypothesis, I think I've shared with you before, that countries that have negative interest rates have a couple characteristics in common. And the reason we have to go that route is because we don't really have a lot of experience with this negative interest rates, this era. And so what I did was I thought, well, what do they have in common? Who's adopted them? And what do they have in common? And I thought of two macro characteristics they have in common. One is a country does not have negative bond yields unless the central bank puts the overnight interest rates below zero. And those central banks that put interest rates below zero have economies that have current account surpluses. And I know sometimes we think about current account surpluses as just like your external surplus, trade surplus. But it's also, from an economist's point of view, it's this identity that basically says your current account if you have a current account surplus, it is that you have your savings greater than your investment. So it's like an identity. And so that means, so I thought then, and the bottom line here is that I did not think that countries with current account deficits could have negative interest rates. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe if they can have negative interest rates, what happens? Where is the pressure relieved? And I think what we're seeing this week in the foreign exchange market in this context of the negative interest rates is the two currencies, the two major currencies that have just performed horribly against the U.S. dollar this week, which is otherwise a pretty quiet week, has been the New Zealand dollar. It's off about 3.3%, which is in the major currencies. That's quite a large move. And the second weakest currency, now at its lowest level since those panicky days in March, is the British pound. It's lost about 2.3% of its value this week. So I think what this means, I think, is that bring it forward, is that if you have a current account deficit and you're going to have negative interest rates and you're going to have QE, that the currency then becomes the weak link, and that begins taking some of the pressure, bearing some of the burden.
What do you think that means for the U.S. dollar then? Because we continue to see the dollar hold up pretty strong, but it's not like the U.S. economy or the Fed are doing anything different than the rest of the world.
No, if it is doing anything differently, it's that the Fed is being more aggressive as far as like how big the balance sheet has increased, how quickly, like say, since the crisis. And, you know, the U.S. government is, they're already looking at a budget deficit this year of 18% of GDP. And that's even before this new package that's being sort of making its way through Congress. So when it comes to the dollar's outlook, I'm very mixed, and partly I think it means that that maybe the dollar's function might not be best understood as a currency in its own right, but rather it's like the fulcrum of a seesaw. That on one side you have the currencies that are levered to world growth, and by growth it's also risk appetite. When people feel optimistic about the world outlook, they're willing to take on more risks. The Australian dollar, the New Zealand dollar, the Canadian dollar do fairly well. And I've been looking for this top in the Australian dollar, and today could be the first time, the first day in more than a month, that it closes below its 20-day moving average. I think that there's a double top there in the Aussie that could bring us down towards target there. I think it can bring you down towards 61.70, 62 cents. And we're just, we were testing 65.60 this week. So I think that the net consequence of this, negative for the Aussie, negative for sterling, which also has the unresolved Brexit issues that it's still dealing with and coming up to some political deadlines. So I those are the currencies that I'd pick on, thinking about the implications with the possibility of negative interest rates and the general risk appetites and the general risk appetites. So negative the Aussie, negative sterling. But against some of the other currencies, the dollar might be able to hold in there. I mean, I think dollar, yen, and the euro are really stuck in trading ranges, and relatively narrow trading ranges at that.
Okay. Thanks for taking a little overview there of how currencies are reacting. But in terms of whether central banks get forced into negative rates or not, it sounds like one thing that we can continue to expect is increasing QE programs. Do you see that changing at all?
So it's interesting about the QE, because what the Federal Reserve has done at its peak at the end of March, it was expanding its balance sheet. It was buying $75 billion worth of treasuries every day. It's slowing down. Now it's only doing $7 billion a day. So in some ways, I think that it's not going to be the asset purchases per se, but some of the other facilities. For example, there's a lot of pressure now coming to bear on the Federal Reserve, coming from Congress, that Congress wants the Federal Reserve to buy longer dated municipal bonds, local and state bonds. Those entities can borrow for 30 years, but the Fed is only buying three year maturities and less. And so I can see how the configuration of what the Fed's doing or what a central bank does may need to be tweaked. Some programs aren't needed so much. Like, you know, the Federal Reserve is offering $500 billion in three-month repos. There weren't a lot of takers, so it ended that program. So I do think that there might be, you know, next month the key issue in the European Central Bank is going to be two things. One is expanding its balance sheet, buying more bonds, to your point about expanding QE, and they might make it easier to borrow from the ECB by diluting the collateral, the kind of quality of collateral, so that they may, and they've already been willing to accept, say, below investment grade collateral. Maybe they will decide to buy as opposed to just collateral, lower grade quality of bonds. So I think we want to look for the programs to be expanded, the asset purchases to be expanded, but also to be tweaked to expand new entities for additional support.
Okay, so from a market perspective and individual sectors, it's been obvious to see that in this world of low, zero, or even negative interest rates, and a lot of spending coming from central banks and even governments, a few sectors have stood out. One of those sectors being gold and even gold stocks that just continue to put in some nice runs. Where do you see, is it just the gold sector that benefits from this, or are there other sectors? Where do you see the biggest beneficiaries coming from this environment that we are in?
Well, I do like the idea. I mean, usually I'm not so bullish on gold, but I do like the idea that you have, that what are the knocks against gold? Oftentimes the knock against gold is that it's not a yield-bearing asset. And now, though, with negative yields at such low yields, that opportunity cost is smaller. And I think what I like about gold as well is that it seemed to be not just a hedge on your portfolio, but it also is an asset in its own right. And so gold has had a great rally. We're actually making a new multi-year highs today, getting up to 1750. So I've been bullish gold since about 1400. My target was 1700, and now I'm thinking with this new COVID, larger bank balance sheets, deeper negative interest rates, I'm thinking that maybe go on our way towards 2000 as the next big price objective.
Hey, well, when you consider where gold is in terms of other currencies, it's already at all-time highs. Any thoughts on that, the discrepancy between gold priced in other currencies and gold in U.S. dollars?
Yeah, no, I know a lot of people look at that. I find that the difference of gold price in, say, euros is just really the dollar price of gold and the exchange rate. So in my mind, I can't really think of them together like that. But for me, the implication is that for the U.S., where the dollar has been strong, the gold is still relatively cheap. And if you have to pay other currencies, gold is getting richer, which may deter buyers.
All right, Mark. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks for taking a little look around the world when it comes to NERP and what central banks have been doing, because, boy, oh boy, they are right back into QE, and, well, they've already cut rates so low that now maybe they're saying we just can't do it anymore. But where does that all leave us as we move through the rest of this year, especially if we get another market pullback or significant market pullback? Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks for your time. Again, everyone, go check out Mark's blog, Mark to Market. Thanks for your time today, Mark.
Thank you. Good luck, everybody.